Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. Thank you for listening once again to your weekly weird podcast of stories from all sorts of people and all sorts of friends. I am your fumbling introductory host for the week, Adam Beebe. With me, as always, is my best friend, old school homie, partner in crime, but not really crime because we're good law-abiding citizens for the most part, Barry Johnston.
Hey, what's going on?
He's going to leave me with that.
I'm sorry. I'm so tired. I'm trying to get my energy back, man. I've been traveling, and it's catching up with me.
Tell us about that. You went to Seattle?
Yep. Went to Seattle. There was a big martial arts summer camp that I attended for 3 days, which was wonderful. It was great to meet people and train intensely. And I'm noticing now that I'm into my 40s, my body does not recover the way that it used to. So I'm trying to learn how to deal with that, you know?
All of the recovery that you're speaking of, that's not all just physical from the training, is it? There's other recovery.
Yeah.
From the travel.
It's travel. Yeah. That's the thing, is like, I don't travel like I used to. I used to travel real well, you know, but man, like the jet lag, you can't even call it jet lag because it's only 2 hour difference, but just the time on the flight, it was like there was a 3 hour flight to LA and then a layover for 2 hours and then another 2 hour and 30 minute flight to Seattle. And I just have a hard time when I've been sitting for a long time. I don't sleep on planes at all. It's just super uncomfortable. And I think I made a mistake by drinking too much caffeine, you know,
so
I couldn't sleep. And then you get there, and then it's like, it's not as simple as just grabbing your bag and then getting to the hotel easily. You got to wait for another hour for the shuttle to come. And then when you get to the hotel, now it's 1 o'clock in the morning. And then you got to quick try to go to sleep and then wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's just like, you know, just a lot. And then you start training and it's like, you know, it's a good, I'd say, 5.5 hour a day training, which could be worse, but at the same time, it's very intense. And so they break it up into morning classes and then afternoon classes. But the problem is once you stop moving, all that lactic acid starts building up. And you just, once you hit the afternoon, you're just like, oh my God, I'm so sore right now. And you know, I try to do the natural thing, you know, and only do only take things that are natural, so I don't contaminate my body with anything. And I try to eat as well as I can. I thought I prepared myself by trying to eat well and sort of slim down a little bit. But it's kind of like a marathon. You just got to do it, you know.
Yeah.
But I made it through it. I felt really good about that. And then I got to spend some time with my sister who's living out there. And man, I just got to say,
that's awesome.
The Pacific Northwest is just beautiful. It's one of my favorite parts of the country. So
yeah, I hear lots of good things about it. I also hear lots of weird things and serial killers out there.
Yeah,
so.
True. And yeah, that is where Ted Bundy was from out that
way. A lot of them out there. Yeah. So. But that's where he started off.
But the weather is amazing. You can't beat the weather. You know, come back home to 102 degree weather. So that's tough to get used to. I'm trying to get my body back into the swing of things down here. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of an adjustment, but it's good. Everything's good. We're, you know, keeping moving with the kids and they're busy with doing their summer stuff. And So how about you, man? What have you been up to?
Nothing. Nah, but you're out there globetrotting and, or at least country trotting and doing all that. And I've just been actually, you know, I've been lining up a lot of good, cool stuff for us to interviews for us to have and getting us ready for our first year anniversary that we've been doing this. And that will be out. Yeah, that'll be about, you know, August 27, I believe, and that'll be that we'll have, that's the year to the day of our first release.
Wow.
And we'll have release on that day. But we got some cool stuff coming up. We've got a next week we've got a guy named Birdshot, and he is going to tell us some he's quite a character. And he is going to tell us some stories about what he called it, was white trash Mississippi. Yeah. And also he is a sideshow performer in a traveling sideshow act. So he's got cool stories about that. And he was brought to us by our buddy Emotron. So that's going to be cool. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be a little blue. So, you know, you don't want the kids to be listening to that.
Definitely put the kids away for that, for sure.
But that's a good one. And then the following week, we're going to have Dr. Louis Turi. And man, he's a huge get for us. He's a he's an interesting guy, and he's got some cool stuff. He was an abductee, and he also was given these powers of prediction is what you would say, and he's, you know, got a really good track record on that. And so we're talking to him, and he might be a controversial figure for some people because of his experiences and his beliefs and where he's coming from. But just, man, a delight to talk to, and just, you know, full of energy and you know, just super positive. And that's one of the things that he's, you know, all about. So we got those coming up, and a lot more coming up as we round out our first year and start getting into our second year. And it's just been amazing that, I guess kind of humble brag, kind of pat ourselves on the back, but we've been doing this for almost a year straight. This will be our, I think this is episode 50, and we haven't missed a beat. We haven't missed a week. You know, we've learned a lot. I think we've certainly got a lot better, but it's been a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
we've got to meet some amazing people.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. And we've got to know some people that we already knew a little bit better, you know?
Right.
But that's, you know, we'll talk about that on our year anniversary special that'll be coming out in the next few weeks. So something forward to look forward to, if I can get that out of my mouth. But today we have Nilok joining us, aka Visitor 10, and he's an interesting guy. He's an interesting fellow. He's got some really cool stuff, and we had a really great, very interesting conversation that just got into a lot of different areas and a lot of levels and deepness and stuff. And, like, you know, we had, like, one of the things that he was coming to talk to us about, which in the entirety of the episode is really just a small portion of it, but it's really cool. He's got some really cool things to say, and he's got a very unique perspective and how he is existing in life, in this universe. And we really, we had a good time talking to him.
Yeah.
So I guess without further ado, Visitor 10, because I like calling him that. Visitor 10, what's your weird story?
Full name Sengam Nilok. We have self-ordained ourselves a fluctuating facial facade, forewarning apocalyptic time-traveling thaumaturge who practices alchemy, or wizard for short and colloquial terms. But that's a convoluted mouthful, so you can just call us Visitor 10 or Nilok, right? And shit started to go down in 2006 when we realized that there was a little bit more to this reality than meets the eye and the material realm. And so we kind of took an interest in a lot of different things: metaphysics, spiritualism, lucid dreaming, mind-body connection, and therefore separation, and just kind of suspending one's belief or disbelief within this reality and how far one can possibly go. And since then, it's kind of led us on a myriad of wacky adventures and journeys. But I guess the one that we're kind of here to talk about today is a hybrid of the two main stories that kind of plague our existence at the moment. And yes, we are using we to denote the I, because I is something that we all share, and kind of a big responsibility to don the letter I. So we've decided to dissect ourselves up into what we feel as though represents the archetypal human, and the different things that the human reality can bring upon you. So we've been kind of paying homage to the multicellular organism that we populate by referring to our singular entity as a pluralized entity. So anyway, in 2006...
I like that.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, what was the catalyst to sort of have you dive deep into this way of thinking? Was there something that sort of catapulted you into delving deeper within?
Probably, yes. So in college, art school being as flimsy and frou-frou-y as it can be, we were asked in a sculpture class to choose an alternate personality, or like an alter ego of some sorts. And so not really wanting to don a character that was too far away from the, you know, specimen that we were building, that, you know, everyone is, you know, involuntarily assigned to, you know, the subjective I of sorts. We decided to kind of look in the mirror and ask further what it really meant to be a human or be a singular entity. And so that's kind of when we started taking hints or messages from the mirror world of sorts, and realizing that everyone has a mirror name, or a wizard name, a mage name, whatever you want to call it. And it's the stark opposite of your government name. So choosing Sengam Nilok as ours, we realized that since the government owns your one name, the mirror name is kind of who you choose to be. And since we're kind of all about manifesting one's reality and will around us, and started to dive deeper into chaos magic and mind-body separation, there was kind of an evening in which our 17-year-old self stumbled upon some universal truths or functionings or realities of mysticism that were a little bit too much for, like I said, my 17-year-old ego at the time to really deal with. And so on July 14th, 2007, we committed mental suicide. And but there's a whole larger story that kind of led up to that. But that would be the definite major catalyst that brought upon the dissection of ourselves up into what we feel as though represents the archetypal human.
So can you, because I think I've got a good idea what you're saying, and but for our listeners, and can you go a little bit more into what you mean by, like, by mental suicide?
Sure. Yeah. So that's a specific story within itself. We happened to be volunteering at a music festival of sorts, and we're kind of interested in mind-altering substances to a certain extent, and had also been doing this research on mind and body separation and lucid dreaming and the dream world, and kind of what it all means to merge the two and or separate and compartmentalize. And so we kind of found ourselves walking down this path of self-realization, where we realized that life in itself, to exist, is to be your own God and manifest the reality with around you, and that you have the power to be whatever it is that you want to be. But unfortunately, our ego kind of told this to ourselves through these realizations in this very stark, complicated manner, that it kept using the word I in this really profound way, that was saying that I am God, I am this. Mm-hmm. And so therefore kind of creating this separation and delineation between myself and others, but not really a huge fan of like the amount of pressure that was adopted by such a philosophy. We decided what we're talking about took like years to come right to the conclusion of, because unfortunately, like after this day, there was this residual, like 3 to 5 years that, like was still like this, like
hashing it out period.
Yeah. Like figuring out what right exactly happened. But I guess bottom line is that, we became really overwhelmed with reality and mm-hmm that, and having such power and this responsibility, and also like being, you know, held captive in this human body, mm-hmm, is when we decided to, we had been suicidal, a couple times before that, but never, obviously succeeded in the deed, and, realize like, why are we trying to kill the machine when we should go after the pilot? And the pilot is perhaps the one at fault for such mental travesties of sorts. And so we decided to focus our attention upon the pilot, and it just kind of clicked. I don't know really what happened. There was just this moment that it was like, oh yeah, this makes so much sense, and this is how I'm going to do it and how it's going to go down. And, funny enough, I guess like, Hollywood must have had a funny influence, and the movie The Matrix, because mm-hmm that is kind of how it, mentally, manifested itself mm-hmm within, my brain at the moment, was this like pulling out of the plug. And so from that moment on, well, we became unconscious on the ground. And I guess that is when people noticed, us kind of convulsing or maybe seizing on the ground. Later was told, that we, I awoke, to paramedics, like scooping our like bloody entrails and like inside out vessel. 'Cause I guess what we didn't know, upon, exiting the vessel, we turned ourselves completely inside out, and was, before we burrowed to the center of the earth, or what we now, know to be called, the Binktine Mines. And we learned that through, teaching ourselves how to freestyle, or like, translate universal gibberish to a certain extent.
I got you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absurdisms.
So your art, as it were, is a way of connecting with that. Is that what you're saying? Is that you started opening that channel up to be able to, interpret these ideas and voices and things, that you were feeling through the we, through the vessel that you know, that we are inhabiting? Is that sort of close to?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. It definitely dove into, being a facilitation of, understanding what this reality is, mm-hmm, and having the art be there to kind of facilitate and express the, very dynamic points of view that any individual can have. And like, you know, like, are these thoughts mine? Where are these thoughts coming from? You know, mm-hmm. and do I identify with these thoughts? You know, like, because, you know, I feel like any human brain on any given moment is like thinking some wild, crazy shit, like yeah. beyond what they really want to be, you mm-hmm. know, like,
yeah. But most people don't entertain those thoughts for very long. Mm-hmm. I like that you've kind of adopted this idea that, like, even though it's a fleeting thought, maybe that needs some investigation. You know, I like that. I like that. Most people don't do that. Most people are not that introspective.
Mm-hmm. Or willing to take that risk, right. I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
It's some of what you've described in your process of, I guess, separating from your mental suicide, you're separating from the ego, I think, is how I'm interpreting it, right? It reminds me, and you pointed to The Matrix, it reminds me a lot of the writings of Grant Morrison in his graphic novel series, The Invisibles, mm-hmm. Which, if you haven't, if anybody out there hasn't read or is interested in some really like heavy metaphysical and really thought-provoking and weird in the best way possible kind of, you know, reading and throwing in a dash of like anarchy and spies, that's a good series I can highly recommend.
Cool.
Nice.
But it seems like that because, you know, there's a lot of the things that, like, you've described about, like, there's a mirror soul, a mirror kind of consciousness or idea, or, you know, with the magic. He's a big practitioner of chaos magic and a big...
Nice.
Yeah, he's really into, like, promoting that and stuff like that. And so...
Can we go over what chaos magic is for those of us that aren't familiar with that?
Sure. Chaos magic is kind of whatever you want it to be, which is the beautiful thing about chaos magic. It does have a lot to do with manifesting your will or intention mm-hmm. or desires, but it isn't just and this is like where magic gets a bad rap. It's not just like, I want to be rich, you know, like, right. or like some light other type of like, right. you know, crazy. Yeah, it's all about like what's within your power. Mm-hmm. And if you do have like such a huge, strong desire, you know, as being something that's like light years away from where you are now, it's about envisioning how you're going to get there,
right.
and how to take those steps to do that.
Sure.
And then there is a lot about, manifesting and conjuring and keeping the image strong, mental imaging and projecting. Then it does incorporate also like different ceremonial aspects of mm-hmm. like burning sigils, mm-hmm. Like even sex magic. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing about chaos magic is that you can incorporate any practice that you want into it. So if you come from a Christian background or have been studying Buddhist or Hinduism philosophies, or for Christ's sake, Satanism, or, you know, any what, like, what's your practice, like mm-hmm. chakra meditation, like you can incorporate that into what chaos magic is and your practice of chaos magic,
gotcha.
which is really neat. Honestly, our main form of magic right now is the exploration and expression of mask work, which is mm-hmm. where the fluctuating facial facades part of the title comes into play, and how we've been choosing to dissect the many perspectives and voices within the human experience and kind of personify them into these masks. Mm-hmm. And originally, there was a cap on 10, but I think the human consciousness and experience is way too complex to like yeah. keep it at such an arbitrary number, you know.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've seen some of your videos where you
oh, wow.
where you do that, where you're switching masks and you're is that which came first, the music idea behind it or the thought of the different masks? Is that a fair question?
That's totally a legit question, and actually kind of lends itself to the gas mask story, which is kind of what brought us here. Mm-hmm. So after exploring concepts of mind and body separation and time travel, and then committing mental suicide and discovering the Bingtine mines, we found ourselves right back where we started, you know, in this human vessel, and wondering, like, well, why? Like, why did we return? I mean, aside from not killing the machine and having the heart still beating, and you can't just kill your brain and go into a coma. I mean, you can, but, you know, like, that wasn't a full committal on our behalf. I guess we've often lent a lot of our or received a lot of our power within art production in the unconscious realm. And so we kind of just get these ideas and feel the compulsion and just follow that and do that. Mm-hmm. And so masks kind of became being a banana rack fabricator and dust collector, which is what we went to school for, building dust collectors and banana racks. Everything's a banana rack. You just got to put a banana on top of it and boom, banana rack. And so we realized that making masks was kind of this unconscious process of sculpture that we wanted to pursue. And right around realizing, like, well, if we believe in time travel and but yet are bound to this physical body, and because everyone is also bound to a physical vessel, and we've developed this this language around time and communication and geographical location, then time travel, like, can't fully exist because there's all of these potential time machines, you know, like 8 billion of them at this point, peopling this rock as we fly around the sun. And so we realized that that every day was your birthday, and then therefore every day was a personal apocalypse as well. And
okay.
Which is, as soon as we figured that part out and started entertaining stronger the idea of on death on a daily basis as well, and fabricating these masks, then 40,000 gas masks just, like, fall into our lap out of nowhere in North Philadelphia somewhere, 19th and Indiana Avenue. And right around that time, because we are such a fan of art forms of the unconscious, such as automatic drawing. I mean, you can get into the flow state doing whatever, whatever your art is, you know. But we found it most in automatic unconscious drawing, ceramics, and poetry. And once we freed the word from the page and put it into the air vocally and began to continuously attempt to unlock our filter system and remove the filter system and just have it completely flow, is when we kind of realized that we had this passion for poetry and therefore really wanted to make the music thing happen. And that became one of our primary focuses as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So in a lot of ways, your entire life is art, your expression in a way. So people that are listening, you know, the only way for people to hear what we're doing is to listen, because we don't do a video feed, but you're sitting in a room and it looks to be, there's a rope behind you. It looks like to be nooses, maybe possibly, and I'm not going to assume, but, and then there's a bunch of hashes, like you've counted days with, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 with the marked, you know, the fifth day's marked through. What is that? Is that another expression of something?
Yeah, the tallies became a big symbol like a couple years ago, and just kind of grieving over the fact that this human body can very much be a prison, but also celebrating birthdays on the daily. And so it kind of became this strange thing where, like, what is the panopticon? Like, am I in the jail cell looking out into the light and just mesmerized by the shadows dancing on the cave, on Pluto's cave wall, or, you know, or am I the source of light, you know, transmitting this beam, observing, you know, the many prisoners within the panopticon of sorts.
Yeah.
But yeah, tallies are definitely a thing. I don't know. I really like the line and the ability of the line. Mm-hmm. Because the dimensions, they have like such a strange way of interacting, right? Like the third dimension is a cube, you know, but then the second dimension being a plane, but we're like, we constantly think about life as if it were a plane anyway, even though we're three-dimensional characters. It's all about maps and getting to, you know, work on time and like how you transverse this like flat layout of a city, and then you get paid in like flat little pieces of paper, you know, but it's always A to B, you know, and you're always kind of drawing a line, you know, being a victim of chronological experience. You know, I don't know, the dimensions have such interesting checks and balances and power over each other. Mm-hmm. And so the line kind of became, was always a point of interest. And I guess when we discovered tallies and their useful nature within drawing, we were like, of course, this is like a super important idea. Right.
I love it, man. I love your enthusiasm that there's no stone left unturned. Mm-hmm. I just do. I think it's fantastic. I really do, man.
Yeah, and there's something to be said just about simple mark making, you know, like you were talking about earlier about unconscious drawing or automatic drawing, rather, you know, where you aren't, for people who aren't artists or familiar with the term, that's just making marks. It's not consciously trying to make an image. It's just letting your hand, your body, your, you know, do these things, make marks, make drawings or whatever, and letting whatever it is that is going to be. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you you picked up a guitar and just started, you know, playing notes or somewhere between notes or something like that without thinking of melody, without thinking of a song, without thinking of structure, you know, just going and doing and just, you know, and so it's something like that. And that's really, you know, I understand, like, cause I mean, any kind of creative process, you get to a point to where you're like in the zone, you know, and athletes are like this too. You're in a zone and you're so that you are hyper aware of what you're doing and you kind of close out the rest of the world, you know, and that's in a way it's very meditative, but you're not you're not conscious of it being even that kind of meditative, most people at least. So there's something about that, you know, I tap into that I really appreciate, because like just sometimes, you know, I feel the need to, you know, just draw or make marks, you know, maybe it's a little bit of, there's a word for it. Graphomania, I think is what it is, where you have to draw or make marks and stuff like that. So I think a lot of artists, all right, at least 2D artists, traditional 2D artists have that kind of a feel. So
I don't know if like normal people that aren't artists, me speaking of that demographic, you know, it something I never really understood until the last 20 years was art is whatever you want it to be. And I think a lot of people have this idea that art has to be a specific thing in order to be art. Mm-hmm. And kind of what you guys are talking about is it it is wherever the imagination takes you, and it may not even be nothing. Maybe nothing is art, you know, maybe whatever. It could be an expression. It's just how you look at it. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah, if it's all art, then, you know, underneath the umbrella of everything is certainly nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So paradoxes and dichotomies are of high interest as well.
Were you a religious kid? Did you grow up in a religious household, spiritual in any way?
You know, it's funny because my parents did do the whole like church thing for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were like forced to go to Sunday school,
mm-hmm.
but then, you know, the brother and ourselves just kind of like eventually were so not feeling it and put up such a great fight that, my mom was just like, you know what? Fine. You don't have to go, but we're going to do Sunday morning breakfast instead. Cause we would normally do that in addition, mm-hmm. but, and she was like, you know what? Fine. Like, family time is still really important though. And this, you know, and so it kind of just totally, I don't know, my mom's always been like very, very supportive like that. Just very like accepting of, you know, who I am, who we're choosing to be. And this strange, I don't know how we really got this way. Cause, our parents and brother are kind of like, starkly, different, of sorts, but they've just been so loving and supportive all the time.
That's great to hear, man.
That is, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And the girl, the babysitter girl, she picked up the phone and there was a policeman on the other side. And he said, "We've tracked the phone call and it's coming from inside the house."
Whoa.
Yeah, dude.
I love those urban legend stories.
Dude, I do too. And you remember the one where the girl, it's always the babysitter or it's the kids making out in Lover's Lane, but there's the one where the girl comes up and she finds the kids are watching TV and she turns them around and their face has SpaghettiOs.
Oh, man. Or the hook guy. Remember the hook guy?
Oh, the hook was hanging from the rearview mirror. Yeah. So if you got a story that is similar to any of those awesome urban legends, we want to hear it. Because, you know, those urban legends, man, they started off as somebody's true life weird story. It's got to be true somewhere.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know. One of the biggest epiphanies, like waking up after our mental suicide, was like totally of like the... like the hippie flower power age, you know, of sorts. And like, and I didn't have any of that influence. So I was like really kind of wondering like where that came from, you know, when we woke up and had this, like this big idea of like, all you need is love, you know? And I'm just like, where the hell does that come from? Like I used to make fun of that statement before, you know, this, but then like woke up like strongly believing that and like what? Okay.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. Sure.
It's one of those things that it's a silly saying, but in all actuality and all reality and unreality, you know, it is all that we need. Yeah. And if we could, you know, because if we could accept that and, you know, I mean, you boil down all the religions and boil them all the way down to the bare bones. That's all what it's trying to say is, you know, we need to love. We need to love each other. We need to be good to each other. Mm. But yet we can't. We're all, you know, we have a collective ego that, you know, makes it impossible for us
that's also kind of the beauty of it, too, because, you know, like when you look at what John Lennon had, what he said and what he was, we're kind of two completely different people.
Sure.
But the fact that he still said that, or that people still had that idea and still have that idea, is the most important thing. That even though we have chaotic lives and we're not perfect, all we need is love is sort of like, yeah, man. Like, you know, that gets you through a lot. I mean, that, you know, hopefully we're all at a point, we can all get to the point in our life where we can really manifest that, you know, and maybe working toward that is the most important thing.
And I think that's a part of the art. You know, that's what we're all trying to do if we were to look at life as art, as an art project. If you were to look at your vessel as that's your most important sculpture, you know, right. Like it's what you're going to be sculpting until the day you die, you know? And if that is then the mindset, then like there are so many things to like, you know, just walk the road of mastery. You shouldn't ever expect to like get there and like be a master of, you know, like life, because you know, that's like crazy. That's impossible, you know, but certainly like the act of doing and, you know, walking that path, you know, towards, you know, perpetual self-betterment is, you know, like
I agree.
A beautiful thing mind. Yeah,
definitely.
That's a great way to say what your life should strive to be, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always learn, always grow.
Yeah.
Cool.
We all right. had this, go for it.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, we had this other random project. We've been like saving our right leg completely tattoo-less. Mm-hmm. So we've been wanting to collect people and their signatures to proclaim that they are the artists of our canvas, you know, and we created this little contract where it says like, I blank, by signing this document have realized that I have authored the perception of the presenter of this document. And then it like lists off some attributes of sorts, but yeah, just in line with the idea of life being art and you being a canvas or a sculpture of sorts.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So, that's a lot. Yeah. That was really awesome. I mean, that's really, you know, heavy and thought provoking and really fantastic and just an incredible perspective. And self perspective that you've gone through, and it's really, you know, it's profound. And so I guess back to where we start, kind of where we started, you know, you've given this incredible explanation to what seemed to be a simple question, but no questions are really that simple.
So true.
Okay. Yeah. So, as you alluded to earlier, the gas mask, this story, this situation, this is what was the line that drew us together through our friend Aaron, who had also been a guest on the show, and so this is, I'm trying to draw lines and make connections here as well. So give us the story, because this is I'm very intrigued, and it's something that, you know, I've not heard anything like this, what brief little bit that I've heard. So
So after acknowledging that time travel existed and committing mental suicide, then be embarking on this journey of dissecting ourselves up into what we feel as though represents the archetypal human in an unconscious manner, mind you, because we didn't actually know that that's what we were doing at the time. We just started making masks. Mm-hmm. And then we started paying homage to the daily apocalypse or the happy daily birthday mentality. Mm-hmm. And being being within the service of serendipity, 40,000 gas masks decide to like show up pretty much in our backyard as a super amazing and good friend, Dr. DJ TARA Cody Griswold, comes to us randomly. He just had all these titles back then in college. But he comes to us randomly and is like, yo, do you want to go get a gas mask? And I'm just like, man, like, how many, like, this kid like constantly drags us on wacky adventures like all the time, like whether you want it to or not. And just like, and he's been like this counterpart that has been like such a wonderful, like healthy push to, because like despite the fact that I like want to master and conjure all these like skills and talents and different things, I have a horrible time showcasing them. And so I owe Cody a lot just to like pushing us up on stage, like literally, physically, like actual stages, and then in metaphorically as well. But so anyway, this kid comes up to us and is all like, want to go get a gas mask? And I'm like, yo, it's like final season. I'm malnourished, underslept. Like I'm having a hard time like telling what's what in reality right now. And you want me to what? Fine, whatever. And so we jump in this car and we go to this location. And he said that he found this article on Craigslist that just says it was some like our like random title. It didn't say like free gas masks. It didn't say like I am getting rid of my gas masks or anything like that. It just said like come to this warehouse and this address, and there's like gas masks here. And so we roll up and we didn't see anything except for like a neighboring warehouse that had some like action going on in it, some like late night like construction trucks out doing whatever, and a slew of white boxes in this parking lot of this abandoned warehouse. And we just, you know, we didn't want to be too nosy. We kind of figured we were trespassing anyway, but like we didn't really know what was going on, and so we were just kind of like gonna give up early. And you know, we did like a once around, didn't really see anything, but then like as soon as we were about to leave, we were like, yo, what's that on the ground over there? And like sure enough, it was like a smashed up mask, but that on the ground brought us closer to these white boxes. Mm-hmm. And so these white boxes ended up actually being cases of gas masks, cases upon cases upon cases upon cases upon pallets upon pallets upon pallets of gas masks. Wow. And we counted them up, approximately 16 masks per child's case, 16 masks per civilian, and then 18 masks per military model. And we took the low number and did a quick estimate of how many cases per pallet and how many pallets there were. And there was approximately 40,000 gas masks. Damn. In this random parking lot in North Philadelphia. Good Lord. And so we packed our car through and through, thick with gas masks, and kind of just like ran off giddy like little kids back to school. And you know, the very next day, I find ourselves in Havertown, and Cody is back in Philly, back at the site, sending me pictures, being like, oh shit, yo, they're bulldozing all of these gas masks. They're just getting rid of all of them. And in the middle of the day, and I was like, yo, I know we're not there right now, but like, you need to stuff your car full again of cases, and I'm gonna roll up with Mama's minivan, and we're gonna pack that sucker out, and we're just gonna take as many of these gas masks as possible, which ended up being like approximately 700 of them.
Wow.
We've been kind of toting around since April 30th, 2010, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. Weird days. And there's actually like there's a whole slew of them over here. You can see all of these masks.
Oh my god. Wow. All right, so everybody listening at home, he just got up and he's walking around with his camera phone. Says we do our recordings over Skype and we don't show you the video, but we like the video so we can see each other's faces and stuff. But there are just a mountain of boxes of these various kinds of legit gas masks. Like, wow.
And a skull.
And a goat skull. Yeah. Look at all
those. Good Lord. So do you have something epic in mind for those, or are you waiting for the right opportunity?
Well, seeing as how we just proclaimed ourselves to be a time traveling, apocalyptic time traveling wizard, we were like, well, of course, we're just going to like hit the streets with these and play the game of capitalism and start a conversation about what these gas masks mean to people, whether it means warfare or apocalypse or safety or protection, whatever it means, and kind of ask them to exchange what we thought was a fair price was like $20, which would be like the price of like upscale, somewhat, you know, like anywhere you eat in the city of Philly, really, like $20 and a drink or something like that, you know? Yeah. And and so we figured that was decent exchange. So we've just been kind of, they've come up in a myriad of different ways. They've just been kind of incorporating themselves into the art in different facets. And then also, like, we ended up because we kept like hitting the streets with these and like pushing around a wizard trunk in like random parts of Philly, getting on the subway with like a wizard trunk and gas masks and
like, that'll get you some looks in Philly, I'm sure.
Yeah. Definitely. It was a really fun time. And the times aren't over yet. We definitely plan on like kind of continuing to do that. And so we've been kind of like hoarding them to a certain extent, but we're also running out of like functional sizes that people really want to buy or wear. So I think in the end, when it comes down to it, and you know, we don't have many left, we definitely want to just kind of continue to use them as like, as props and like different, like you saw that we are kind of like using it as like texture, underneath that like dollhouse, and, different, like, different ceremonies. I really want to make out of the child's mask because that's the most unpopular, model to buy because people don't want to protect their kids. Damn it.
Well, yeah. Yeah. They don't, they don't want to pretend like their kids are in any danger whatsoever.
I think, and I don't have kids, but this is just me saying, I think that what it probably is that people want the novelty of having their own gas mask that will fit them.
Right.
Whereas, you know, it's a little bit, maybe it's scary or weird or whatever to buy one for your kids. Now, I would have loved to have a gas mask as a kid, man. I would have loved that. That would have been fun.
Right.
I would have worn it all the time as, like, you know, a superhero mask. But, you know, definitely. I was a weird little kid. So,
I mean, that's the exact reason why Cody was able to pry us away from finals season in the middle of, you know, in the middle of school. I was like, you got to be crazy, man. You want me to go on this? Why? I'm so glad we did, though, you know.
That's great.
Yeah. Oh, so funny. We want to make a dress, like a big, beautiful, like, gown out of the children's gas masks. I just think with all the hoses and stuff, they would be really, really interesting.
Yeah, that would be
really cool.
But that probably won't come for a while. We'll probably just continue to play with them. We have a lot of video to do. That's kind of what we're gearing up here for. We finally found space and time to really kind of try to make this video music art thing happen. We've been like the last 4 years have just been like relentless dedication to, you know, making money and trying to get ourselves in a particular spot in which we can kind of let go of the job world for a bit and like concentrate on the art. Unfortunately, we just sustained a herniated disc.
Oh.
So a big part of this year has just been setting the art and music aside and really focusing on healing and not trying to get surgery, which has just been, it's been really interesting. It's been kind of assisting in like the evolution of like our mental and emotional well-being. It's been a big blessing in disguise. I spend a lot of time on the floor laying down, meditating, just kind of like meditating the pain away. And then there's a lot of emotional perks to that, you know, like kind of really sort through like what bothers you, what doesn't, and you know, and then going back to the life is art thing, you know, as you know, a random arbitrary visitor 10, you know, like that's been one of our main enchantments actually in Chaos Magic. Was a while ago we got the term habeas corpus tattooed on our sternum, but backwards, because everything's backwards in the mirror world, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of you may have the body, kind of denoting this relinquishment of the vessel to universal will is kind of the thought behind that. So at the moment we're kind of mildly, you know, of course, you know, the subjective mind is still here, you know, I still exist, this personality still exists, you know, I'm still stuck in this vessel and I have all my past memories, you know, but we've kind of, you know, so with the intentions and will of, you know, this subjective now and this subjective being, we've also attempted to relinquish our will and manifestation of life completely to the universe and its desire for us, I guess. Like what, I don't know, we kind of asked it to try to, you know, help sculpt us into the best visitor we could possibly be, you know, and so I feel like that is kind of in line with that, this herniated disc, just really keeping me physically down, but this journey of not letting it keep me down.
Yeah.
Injury makes you navigate things a little bit differently.
I think
when you're young and you're invincible, the world is maybe to you clear, but as you start navigating age a little bit and having to deal with those little things, it's profound because it does play a psychological mind game with you. And
yeah,
I think it's where a lot of people get trapped. You know, we had a Emotron, he was on, and we talked about psychedelics and ayahuasca DMT stuff, and you know, I see a similarity there where, you know, you're looking for relief, you know, mentally in a lot of ways people are, but that's the same thing physically. If you have physical pain, you're looking for an escape there also. And how do you deal with that? Because the physical pain is maybe in some ways more delicate because you're actually feeling the nerve endings that aren't working well, or, you know, the things that are broken in your body.
Yeah.
And how to remain positive and stay on the path of enlightenment and furthering the self, and how do you navigate that? It's an interesting thing that we're presented with in this world. We're not just a spiritual being. We also have a meat vehicle that we got to take care of. And it's a conundrum, you know?
So true. Yeah.
Well, another thing though, about, and as like you were saying, is that when you do have an injury like that, that especially one that makes it where you, are, you know, you can't move very much or you're limited in your body movement, that slows you down. And that's something that often, especially in our accelerated culture, in our society, and in our contemporary world, being able to slow down is something that we need a lot of the time, because we are going too fast to try to do too many things, because, you know, we've got all these things that we have to do. We have to go, like you were saying, we have to go to this place and work. We have to go do this. We have to go do that. We have to do all these things. We have to wear all these masks. You know, we have to do all that. And when you are injured and when you are hobbled, when you can't make those physical movements to get those places and all that, when you do have to focus on the here and now of healing and the here and now of being, that you have to change this, you know, and help, you know, make your body better and change it like that, then you do have to slow down. And that's also good for, you know, to give for your mental and spiritual look at life to give you the presence to look at the bigger picture. You know, because, you know, when you're moving fast, you see what's directly in front of you. You know, you see you're focused on one point, you're focused on one thing. But when you slow down, all of a sudden, life's in panorama, you know, and you can see there's all this other stuff.
Right.
And you can see the, all these things going on around you that you may have missed. And, you know, I mean, people talk about this all the time. You know, you get so caught up in life, all next thing you know, it's, you know, 5 years later than when you realized, and everything is past, and all these things that you missed, you don't even realize you missed them. So, it definitely can be a, you know, it can definitely be an incredible blessing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, I hope that you are on the mend and that you've been, your body is, you know, getting back to a healthy place and through, you know, and it's helping you, and you're able to harness the downtime, as it were.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your well wishes. It's been a hell of a journey.
Yeah.
And there's been some shitty setbacks along the way that have just really lengthened the experience. But we also kind of owe those setbacks to, you know, like where we are now. Cause like before we could like fake it and kind of lay down and like, you know, like, draw or, you know, wood burn or, you know, be on the phone communications and stuff, you know, whatever. But the second time around when we like re-injured the already healing injury, it was like nothing. It was like lay on the floor and you couldn't do anything. And like, so it was, yeah, it's been a journey and it's been really, really interesting just having, being so much more in touch with, because a herniated disc isn't just a spinal injury. It's more like a nerve injury because your disc is blown out and pinching your sciatic nerve.
Yes.
And like despite the fact that that's all leg, you know, your sciatic goes down, you know, either you have two of them, both your legs, you know, like we've developed this so much more of an intense, intimate relationship with our nervous system that is just like, I didn't know that this was possible. And then it bled into like, you know, how I cope with my depression and, you know, how I deal with anxiety, because if I'm anxious, my injury hurts more. So I have even more incentive to get a hold of that anxiety that and really be, just conscious breathing and
that can create a really bad cycle.
Especially
being injured also, you know, can be, you know, create the depression and, you know, feed the depression and feed the, which will feed the anxiety and it'll feed the pain and it'll just, you know, the negative thing that, so you got to kind of like, you got to work to keep that out and break that cycle and push those things away.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, where you come in with your meditation and your kind of, your approach to, you know, kind of like, you know, in a sense, sometimes you have to rewire your own brain, you know, and I think that's another thing that you were speaking about earlier on when you were saying that, you know, you committed mental suicide. It's like, you know, you have to, sometimes you just have to rewire your own brain.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, I was going through a really, really rough time in life. And I had just, out of a, being brokenhearted out of a relationship and just completely crumbled to the ground. And, you know, like I was just, it was just terrible. I mean, I was just the worst I'd ever been. And I mean, I have a natural tendency towards depression anyway. I've been dealing with that since I was in my teens, but it just was so bad to the point to where I just kind of one day said to myself, I don't want to feel this way anymore. Mm-hmm. And so from that point on, I went about rewiring my brain so that I can not think like that. So I could break that circular pattern that always, you know, that had been with me, and I was able to overcome and I was able to kind of rebuild myself and put myself in a better place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still deal with depression, but I'm better capable now because I can look at it from a different point of view and I could recognize it. Oh, hey, I'm feeling this way because, or I know that this is only, you know, a temporary chemical imbalance in my brain, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't have to beat myself up like I do like I would or do. Mm-hmm. You know, I can stop doing that, mm-hmm. and you know, I can push. You know, I can do things to be better than that, to be different from that, to not feel that way, and you know, and that always that helps me out because, you know, like I said, you know, you rewire your brain, you mm-hmm. put yourself on a different place, a different level, or whatever, and you know, that's to me, that's what you were talking about, and I'm like, yeah, I get that, that.
So I think people, there is truth to that too, because the brain does make the connections, and when you tell yourself something over and over and over again that this equals this, after a while, you just start spouting that as the gospel, and it's like, you know, I do like the Eastern philosophy idea of die a thousand deaths, you know, because like, you know, in life you have to constantly reinvent yourself or be mm-hmm. challenged and be willing to let those, maybe some of those thoughts and stuff that you used to hold, you know, at the core, you got to let them go. Because maybe they're holding you back, or mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're not allowing you to see things for the way that they are. And I think that's important, man. And I think that what, you know, talking about psychological suicide or whatever, I mean, that is really a profound statement in that most people wouldn't say that because it's that conjures up a lot of, you know, very sensitive feelings. But mm-hmm. it is true. In that, if you're really going to soul search and you're really going to try to make something of yourself in this life, you've got to push yourself toward truth. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means accepting that what you were isn't the truth now.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Constant rewiring. Absolutely.
Yep.
I believe in that.
I feel like.
Learning and growing,
and it kind of sucks, like how much if you want to be like just a good human being, how much you kind of have to unlearn,
right?
Yeah, like,
there's true. Just so much crazy toxic conditioning that we've all been conditioned, you know, like mm-hmm. whether we can acknowledge it or not, you know, and like my god,
it's, and that's what we're, you know. I blame a lot of technology for that, but kind of what we're trying to do with the podcast is bring back some of the love, you know, bring back some of the simpler times, you know, and use the technology for something better than spouting off about everything you hate.
Yeah. We're trying to build communities, you know, we're trying to build friendships, you know, and honestly, every person that we've spoken to, if we knew them before or not, it feels like we're talking to friends, you know, and that's been a very valuable and important thing about doing this is everybody we talk to, if you were a friend before, we know you a little bit more intimately. And if we don't know you, we've never met you before, we've had this communication and this sharing that we don't have in general as much anymore because we are connected to our, you know, instant devices that we can, you know, yes, that's for communication, but we're not speaking to each other.
Right.
You know, you send somebody a text and you're like, well, I talked to them or whatever, but you're not, you're communicating right. in a fashion, but you're not having the degree of connection. Right. And that's another reason why, you know, this is an audio podcast, but we do it with Skype so that we can see each other and we can see each other's faces and we can make that connection, right. you know, right. we can, and that's something that like is really important to us because we want to have genuine reactions to the stories. We want to have the same kind of, we want to be a proxy for our listeners because we don't really know a whole lot about what we're going to be told beforehand. Mm-hmm. Because we want to have that same experience that everybody else has. Like if we were just sitting around mm-hmm. and we at a diner or a coffee shop or whatever. And we were sitting at a table and we were just having a great conversation, because that's the whole, you know, right. drive and thrust. It's just that, you know, we like to give people the platform to tell the crazy, weird stories that they don't normally tell, because people do look at you differently yeah. when you yeah. start talking about these things that you, you know, experienced and you know, that you've gone through. And, you know, because there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, that have listened to any episode and go, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, hey, you know, it's like, it's that's fine. That's fine for them. They can do that, you know, but it's not the important thing. We're not trying to convert anybody to any kind of, you know, thinking or whatever, but we just want to present the varied and, you know, the variety
varied.
Of life
they and, are varied.
And stories and yeah. just the spectrum of just amazing things that human beings can and have experienced mm-hmm. here and on this planet in this life. Right. So we yeah, appreciate you sharing yes. What you've experienced in your unique point of view.
Unique.
It's
yeah.
Really very, fantastic.
Very so. Unique.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. You probably knew that already because you're listening or downloaded to the episode off of your iTunes or your Spotify or whatever place you get your podcast from. We want to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to like us, follow us, subscribe to us. Make sure that you get your new podcast episode every week. We'd also like to ask you to rate and review so that we can grow our audience and we can have more friends. We can have more stories. So thanks for listening to What's Your Weird Story.
As we were talking there, you know, I was reminded of something that, you know, because, you know, you're such a unique individual, and your outlook on things is not like it's not like anyone else we've had on, right? But there's a saying in my martial arts practice, and before we start practice, every time we say onagashimasu, which is a Japanese saying for "let me learn from you," and we say it to each other, and even the instructor says it to the student. And what that does is it sort of evens the playing field, and we can now have a conversation, and no one is above each other, and you're practicing your martial art, I'm practicing my martial art, and we meet on the mat, and we try to get better. We try to better ourselves. And I think that
wow.
that really pertains to what we're doing here, especially in this conversation that we've yeah. had today. Mm-hmm. I really feel like that.
I like that a lot, yeah. Gosh, yeah, Japanese culture has been like continuously popping up in different ways. And the same homie Cody, he also ended up moving to Minnesota to work for Sweets Kendamas. Shout out Sweets Kendamas. But this is a kendama right here. Okay. And it's a Japanese skill toy.
Okay.
That's this is where I wanted to go to next. So I'm glad we kind of went there. So
oh, nice.
Explain a little bit about the kendama, because I know you're wearing one around your neck, you know,
yeah.
And, to describe it to listeners so that they'll know kind of what it is. It's like a handle. It's a wooden handle with like, the prong out of the end. And then, there's a kind of like a drum shaped, you know, area where it's got cups on both sides. Yeah. And there's a ball, a wooden ball and a string, and the ball has a hole that you can catch on the prong that comes out of the one end, the top. We'll have a picture of this on the social media.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then you can also catch it on the cups there. So is this, I'm guessing that this is some kind of, for you, this is some kind of a magical implement. This is some kind of like meditation device. This is something that you've taken and really run with, because like
he does some great shit with
that's really cool stuff.
It is. Yeah, it's impressive.
Thanks. definitely still grinding, trying to up the kendama skills. And there's some really wild players out there, but I don't know. Kendama would be what I would call like ball and cup from like a fractal dimension. Mm-hmm. It's like they took like the singular cup and ball, and they enlarged the ball, and now you have three different cups because there's a cup on the bottom the handle as well. Okay. And then it's a big cup, a small cup, a base cup, and a spike. Yeah. And everything lands on a spike, in order to land a trick or lace a trick, we say you have to land it on the spike. So like whatever you start out doing, and then you can stall it in like any fashion possible on like the different perches underneath of it, and then you can hold it by the tama and do different balance tricks.
And the tama being the ball. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Tama is Japanese for sphere. Okay. And then ken is Japanese for sword. Mm-hmm. So really it's the game of sword and sphere.
Yes.
And so when they're together, it spells kendama with a D, but separately it's tama with a T and ken for the sword. And it's become a way of life, really. It's I had no idea that a silly little wooden toy would have like really captivated and grabbed me like this, but it's embarking upon our what's about to be our 32nd revolution around the sun. It was a really great reminder that you can do anything that you put your mind to if you just practice and put in the time and fail. You need to fail. Failure is mm-hmm. a huge part of mastery. What's the expression? The master has failed more times than like you can ever imagine, and you're afraid to like fail once, and that's like the biggest, that's the biggest mental hurdle, like of starting any new task, is like looking dumb, feeling silly, I'm so embarrassed like to sing in front of people, I'm gonna sound bad. It's like, yes, you will, but that's okay. And right. that's why you do it again and you do it again.
Right.
And kendama has like really brought that patience, agility, hand-eye coordination, precision. It is a life lesson within a hilarious analog pastime. It's great.
That's awesome.
I love kendama so much.
How long have you been recently doing that for?
I guess it'll be 4 years next year.
Okay.
I think it's three. Yeah.
Okay.
Currently. And just beginning to get into like the world of flowing with it, because there is a third component. It is the string, which is the most important element, but people don't give it a lot of what it deserves. But it is the binding element. And then you can also, kendama is really neat because it bridges the gap between flow toys, skill toys, juggling, and yo-yo. I mean, yo-yo is a skill toy, but yeah, you can get flowy with it. You can get technical with it. You can get stringy with it. You can juggle it. It's amazing. I love kendama.
That's great. No, that's fantastic.
yeah, it's really cool, man.
It is. Bring it, because this is what I relate it to is martial arts, and we do a lot of weapons training, and the reason why mm-hmm. you do that is because you learn so much more through something in your hand. Mm-hmm. You learn more about balance, you learn more about how to stand correctly, about body placement, and I just think it's important to have something like that, that you're constantly pushing the mind to think mm-hmm. of you know, a new way to do something and have something, you know, as challenging as it is meditative. At that point where you get to, where you can get to the meditative state and you're no longer thinking about, I got to land this fucking ball on the thing, man. You know, when you get past the technical shit to the flow state is what is, that's where the beauty is, you know?
Yeah.
That's when it becomes an art, you know?
Definitely.
That's cool.
Yeah. And working your ass off for something and then finally getting it, you know, and like, like, you know, maybe you come close a bunch of times, you know, and then that there's that one day where you're just like, yes, you know, and you look back on like all the times that you like failed, you know, and you're just like, finally did it. Like hard work.
That's great.
Is like the true satisfaction within that. Yeah. Gosh. Oh, and then, The weirdest part of the gas mask story, to backtrack a little bit, if you don't mind, so after rummaging around the second night there and packing up Mama's minivan, we discovered packaging slips that told you how many pieces per pallet, how many pallets per truck, and where it was all going. And through this, we learned that approximately all 40,000 of these gas masks were delivered to Huntingdon, Pennsylvania on September 10th, 2001, the day before September 11th.
Oh, wow.
These all showed up. Yeah. Huh. At a place that was actually right near... I forget how far away, but it was very close to the crash site of the plane that was hijacked from the hijackers.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, having a strange abstract paranoid brain, to begin with, you know, we wandered down this path of like conspiracy for a little bit. But then kind of ultimately decided that to kind of not really like make that the biggest highlight of like what the gas masks were bringing to our reality, because who knows at this point, you know, they don't even know, you know, if 7-Eleven was an inside job.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's
certainly
it's
a travesty.
Yeah. It's certainly odd that that's the date that was on, you know, that it was there, that those things. So that's really, it's an odd coincidence for sure. But you know, I mean, there were so many weird things that were happening in the world, in the subconscious at that time. Cause like on the very same day, there was an album.
It was a rap album.
Yeah, it was a rap album, and I'm totally blanking on the guy's name. And there's two people, but they released it, and on that cover, there was a plane, or I believe it was a plane that was hitting the World Trade Center.
Yeah,
I mean, there was some kind of explosion on the World Trade Center on the same day.
Yeah.
And there was like, you know, so there was these things that, like, you know, people had kind of like entertain the idea of this as something to happen, you know, and then it did, and it was just, but it was, there's all these other weird little coincidences around the same time. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. I don't like to chase conspiracies because they can lead to really bad, dark places, and with no shred of, you know, absolute, you know, any kind of thing, but it's just really, it's really unusual.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's really
wild. But I think that your approach to make something positive out of these things that, you know, that you found and to use them and incorporate them into your art and try to be, you know, a good thing in life. I think that's really cool and laudable. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
For sure.
Cool.
Oh yeah. Thanks so much for entertaining the stories here. And
yeah.
Well, hey, thank you for coming on. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, definitely,
on, man.
Yeah, it's been a really, really entertaining, really enjoyable conversation, really heavy and really, you know, mind expanding and all sorts of things. So it's really cool. And, we really appreciate it that you took time to come here and tell us all these things. And is there anything that, you know, you want to plug or promote while you're here?
The main thing that we're kind of plugging right now is just the Instagram visitor 10. And you know, we have some musical projects on the way, but gosh, with this injury, it's just been, you know, so it's been hard to like really kind of keep them moving at the state that we really want to, you know. But there is new music, you know, coming out. But you know, mostly if people connect on the Instagram, you know, through this, then you know, that's you know, where we kind of exist on the internet, you know, mostly right now. So
cool. Yeah, I'd encourage people to go check out your YouTube videos. There's some pretty cool shit going on. So
thanks. Yeah, definitely want to try to release more. Yeah, but I don't know. We have this like bad habit of just like shunning anything that we've already done.
That is,
it's like, no, it's horrible. Don't
That's
look at
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I go through that. Every record I make, I say the same fucking thing. As soon as it's done, it's fucking trash.
I think most artists are never fully happy with anything, you know, in their eyes, nothing is ever done or completely right. Yeah. And that's something that I had to learn to look at where it's, you know, I had to get to a point with my art. I have to say, okay, it's good enough. You know, it's otherwise I will work on it and I'll work on it and I'll end up overworking it and taking away some of the magic of it. And that's sometimes, you know, you like with me, some of my paintings are very, very, very loose and abstract and, you know, very gestural and like not very refined, but that's where the magic lies. You know, that's where it captures the expression the most. And so sometimes, you know, you just got to say good enough.
I feel that. For right now where I am, this is okay, right? Be okay with this.
Right,
this is good enough.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah,
awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's been fantastic, man. If you have any other, you know, weird experiences, anything happening, man, give us a holler. And we'll get you back on, no problem. So
hell yeah,
open door policy.
Cool,
man.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, thanks again. Yeah, it was really nice to get in the chat with y'all. Really appreciate it.
You too, man.
Yeah. Take care.
All right, man.
Take care of your back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that. Definitely will. Y'all do the same.
All right, bro. All right. Take care.
Barry, what do you think that people find the most far-fetched? Ghost stories or aliens as being the more unbelievable?
I would say aliens.
You know, I would agree with that probably too, because I think with ghosts, there's a part of the belief system that is abound throughout the world, and we want to have some kind of assurance of some form of life after death.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with aliens, it's unknown for sure. It's completely unknown. We have only our imagination. We don't have a lot of universal stories that we agree upon that these things exist, maybe.
To believe in aliens is to believe that we are not the sole existence of this world, which goes against a lot of belief systems.
It definitely does. But you know, the great thing about what we're doing here is we are open to all your stories about ghosts or aliens or anything in between or anything outside of. We're not here to judge. We're here to just talk and to share. And we don't want you to think you're crazy, because you're not.
Well, Nilok, thank you for coming on the show. I mean, some great stories. Appreciate his time, and just a really interesting person.
Yeah. Yeah, just a lot of that conversation was it just kind of happened, you know. It was a very organic conversation that just happened between the three of us, and, you know, and Visitor 10 was a little bit, he was a little bit timid and shy at first, but, you know, as we talked, he really, you know, opened up to us and really, you know, shared with us, and we really appreciate that. That led us to have just this, that really fantastic conversation, you know, from everything from the gas mask, you know, but also for the mask that he talks about and refers to, and about, I guess, his consciousness is where he's at in life and how he, you know, is making his way through this, and you know, about chaos magic, and I don't know, man, it's just really, it was unexpected, but man, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, he lives his life sort of as an artist, you know, sort of living every aspect of his life in that way, and it's really fascinating to be able to talk to someone that has that as a vision and doesn't deviate from it, you know. And I think that's a lesson, I think, for anyone, is whatever it is that you are pursuing in your life, pursue it and do it to the best that you can, and try to do it in a way that is satisfying to you. And then any of the accolades or any of that kind of stuff that some people may be, you know, more prone to, that's secondary, really, than the experience. And I like the fact that he's involved in so many different angles of art and living his life that way. It was really quite interesting.
For sure, man. Thank you, Visitor 10, for visiting with us, man. We really appreciate that.
Yes.
So yes, I guess that's about all we've got for this week. Just, you know, stay tuned for more coming up. We've got, you know, with Birdshot and then Dr. Tory, and then our big year anniversary show, which is going to be a lot of fun. And don't forget, we've got our live event coming up in October.
That's right.
Got my tickets, and fantastic. Everything is ready for traveling and coming down there, and going to tell some funny stories. And, you know, everybody out there listening in the area, if you're planning on coming to the show, the What's Your Beer Story experience there at the Enid Brewing Company, let us know so we can kind of get an idea, you know. And if we would love to hear some stories, we would love to get you to, you know, go ahead and let us know if you want to share your stories. Because, I mean, that's just what's going to be fun. It's just going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. And so we hope we see a lot of familiar faces and also some new faces as well.
Yes,
so.
Fun, libations, some good food. We're going to enjoy ourselves. Yep. We're going to tell some funny stories and just have a good time.
Yeah. That'll be great. So thanks for listening. You know the spiel. We want to hear your stories. You guys are what has helped us do this for almost a whole year, and you know, a little bit more almost now. Well, it will be soon. You know, we can't say how much we appreciate you guys listening and spreading the word and telling people about the show and for sharing. And, you know, we want to hear your stories. So get a hold of us, write them down, get a hold of us to talk to us here on the podcast. You know, be a part.
Yes.
Barry's tired. So we're gonna let it go and have his wife go tuck him in so he can get to bed early tonight. So, all right, everybody. Thanks again. Be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.